Good evening. This is Eli Horowitz of Thibault Breakdown here bringing you the Atlantic Division podcast. I'm joined by Vivek Jacob and James Hollis. Vivek Jacob of Thibault Breakdown. You can find his work at studentofthesport.com. Be sure to follow him on Twitter at Vivek M. Jacob. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Eli. How are you doing?
Doing pretty good. And also, obviously, my B-ball breakdown brother from another mother and host of the Instant Offense podcast, James Hollis. What's going on?
All right, man. Just give me your PayPal information. I'll send you that $20. I didn't think you had the nuts to actually put that across there. So that was pretty cool. What's going on, man?
Not too much. Just at home. What do you guys been up to today?
just hard work.
Some writing in. You go ahead, James.
Hard at work. I'm pretty bowled over by some of the things coming out in the whole Derrick Rose thing. I don't know if we're gonna talk about that today, but it's disturbing. That's about it for me today. Worked hard today, and I'm excited about this podcast.
Very cool. I just asked because I didn't do anything today, honestly. So I'm very excited to kick this off. So for our listeners, we're going through the Atlantic Division, five teams. We're going to put about 10 minutes on the clock to keep it moving. And we're going to go in order of record from last year. So in case you only care about the Knicks, you can tune in after 20 minutes. We're going to start with the Toronto Raptors, 56-26 last year. Obviously, they lost in six games in the Eastern Conference Finals to the Cavs. Notable offseason moves, they signed Jared Sullinger. Obviously, they lost Biombo, drafted Poeltl, Siakam. Start with you, Vivek. How would you rate their offseason moves?
Well, I mean, they didn't really do too much. I don't think they had the flexibility to get much done in terms of free agency. The main priority was signing DeRozan, and they were able to get that done. So that was big in and of itself. In terms of losing Biombo, that was sort of part of the package in terms of getting DeRozan back. Poeltl is actually not a bad player out of Utah. He's got some solid post moves. He's similar to JV. And Siakam, he's like a little Biombo. So it'll be interesting to see him get up and down the floor.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that draft. Personally, I wasn't a big fan of the move. Like you said, to some extent, it's redundant. I was at Summer League, watched him up close. I thought he looked pretty soft, if I'm going to be honest. But Are Raptors fans excited? Are you excited about him?
I don't know if I'd say excited. I mean, I think there's probably that top five or six that you can get excited about. Everyone else is probably in that, you wait and see what they can give you kind of range. And I'd put Poeltl there. I don't know if he's going to be spending any time with the Raptors 905 in the D League. He's going to be the primary backup to Valanciunas. So, I mean, I think that puts a lot on Valanciunas's plate. Because before, if he got hurt, if he was struggling with foul trouble, Biombo could just step in and get it done. But that's not going to be the case anymore with Poeltl in the picture.
James, what do you think about the draft selection?
I even said before he got drafted there, I wasn't a big fan. And I'm going to admit I'm a little biased against the, for lack of a better word, the what's known as in the NBA as the big white stiff. He can move. He moves very well. He's not as strong as you like him to be, I think. And sure, Siam might be like a Biombo light. That's the whole point. It's Biombo light. Biombo, I think, was an underrated part of what Toronto did last year. So losing him, I understand why they lost him. They couldn't pay him the money he wanted, and they had to pay DeRozan. But losing him, I think, is a lot bigger deal than people really make it out to be. Because now you just have a lot of redundancy. And it's the modern center. You want rebounding. You want speed. You want to be able to switch on the perimeter. And you're shot blocking. And they don't have a lot of that right now. So it'll be interesting to see how Toronto bounces back. Their defense wasn't that great last year, but where'd they finish last year, Vivek? Remember, defensively?
Defensively, I believe they were 11th.
Well, okay, so I take that back. They were actually very good defensively, and I think you'd agree. I think you'd agree with me that Biombo was a big part of that. It remains to be seen how do they bounce back now. So I for a draft, I gave him like a, because I'm not a big fan of big Jakob. I gave him like I think a D. I wasn't happy with that. I don't like that.
Yeah, I mean, while we're on the subject of defense, in terms of offseason losses, I think right on par with losing Biombo is losing Andy Greer as an assistant coach. He went and teamed up with Tom Thibodeau again in Minnesota. And Andy Greer was sort of the mastermind in changing the defense from two seasons ago to last season, where they were able to hide JV a lot better. So I think going to be a loss.
Yeah, wasn't Greer the coach in Chicago with Tibbs who got fired, not by Tibbs, by management, and that kind of started the huge rift in Chicago?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's strange, but I'm glad that they're back. I mean, it'll be scary in Minnesota with them back together. I have no clue why the Bulls management got rid of him. He was right. He was Thibodeau's, like, you know, right-hand man defensively. Vivek, offensively, you know, my impression of the Raptors, and we talked a little about this earlier, you do see some horns. You occasionally see some triangle concepts, but, you know, a lot of times it's just a lot of isolation. And to me, especially when you get to the playoffs, it's just so easy to game plan against them. Do you see anything changing this year?
I honestly don't see too much changing. In terms of the spacing on the court, I think their options are limited once again. I mean, they went from Scola to Sullinger. And Scola actually did a great job shooting. He shot close to 40% from three last year. Sullinger is not going to give them that. His career percentage is around, I think, in the mid-20s. And so it's just going to be a lot of ISO with DeRozan, a lot of high pick and roll with Lowry. And the thing they always get away with in the regular season is you get a lot of calls that you don't get in the playoffs. And so that's why their efficiency dips so much, because they get so dependent on something that isn't conducive to playoff success. And that's sort of why they had to grind through seven games against Indiana, grind through seven games against Miami, when on paper they really should have got through both those series a lot sooner.
Yeah, it almost felt like they won just because it was, you know, there was nobody else to take the series. James, you know, you mentioned you're interested to see how they bounce back. Do you feel like they've plateaued at 56 wins?
I'm going to have to say, yeah, and I almost forgot till you brought it up about Sullinger. Sullinger is going to be a positive. He doesn't – sure, this might be a motivating summer for him where he can come back in shape and all, but it's – yeah. So I think we might have seen the best out of them, and that's not a bad thing. I had a big discussion with this with Matt Moore one day on Twitter about how, you know, hey, if Memphis wasn't a contender, why are they still doing it, you know, blow it up? And I realize that's the wrong mentality to have. Hey, you want to have a quality team. Toronto's a quality team. Just because you're not the contender or a top two or three contender doesn't mean you should just blow it up. So I think they've plateaued, but I mean, you got to tip your hat to what they've done there in Toronto. But yeah, I'm thinking they might take a little step back this year.
Yeah, just quickly going back to the draft, I was just taking a look. And on one hand, there wasn't, you know, in the teams, I mean, I think this draft was all over the place. And I don't think many teams were very sure about what to do. But just looking at, you know, Thon Maker going 10th, even Denzel Valentine, who, I mean, I know some people are hot on him, some people are colder, but I mean, he can shoot and he's another guy that can potentially be a scorer. I'm just not sure, you know, I'm not sure they really took advantage of this offseason to try to add somebody that maybe could help them get to that next step.
Yeah, I think it was just more in terms of the insurance, in terms of not knowing what was happening with Biombo or DeRozan, right? At that point, they hadn't re-signed DeRozan. So I think they had to make sure they had a big. In terms of Valentine, I mean, they've already got, you know, Corey Joseph and DeLon Wright and Terrence Ross and Norman Powell. So I don't think that was a realistic option. But yeah, there were different ways maybe in terms of getting more help now. But the D-League team, the 905 team, has really helped in terms of developing, you know, guys like Norman Powell and even Bruno Caboclo. So I think they believe in that, and I think they think that they can just send Pirtle down if he needs to get some quality minutes instead of just riding the pine.
And one more question, start with you, James, on the Raptors before I get your predictions. What are your thoughts on Casey as a coach?
So you guys are the X and O brains. I know that he's obviously he gets his guys to play hard. They play hard every night. He's done a lot better than I thought he'd ever do with this Toronto roster, which means he's fostering a good chemistry. He's brought out the best. I mean, look. He's got his boy DeRozan paid $139 million, and Kyle Lowry just went from kind of a, you know, fringe starter backup to an all-star under Casey. So you got to give him his props. He has them believing in themselves. This season is just because I think now that they are at the plateau, how do you keep them up there, and how do you make them believe that they can actually compete with the best of the best? Because I mean, regular season one thing, like you said, but when it comes to playoffs, I mean, you know, Cleveland just kind of put their foot down and things take off. Real quick, back to the draft, I'm just looking, and they picked, you know, Jakob, but there was a lot of talent on the board. And I understand they already kind of, you said, they set at the wings with Norman Powell and DeRozan, but, I mean, hey, we keep saying about an NBA, you know, a guy like Taurean Prince, even Juan Hernan Gomez, he looked amazing in summer league. He's really active and long, and
yeah, that's,
you know,
true.
shooting with Henry Ellison, like those guys, Malik Beasley, Dante Bembry are these athletic kind of multi-talented swing men that every team needs with a little bit of size. Malachi Richardson's a shooter, so I mean, I guess they're happy with what they have going forward as far as the bench makeup, but they could have used a little bit more.
Yeah, I think the one thing that surprised me was when they picked Siakam, Deontay Davis was still around, and I thought that might have been a right gamble to make at that time. But, I mean, I'm sure Masai has his faith in his African guys, and because he's always making those Africa trips. So I heard he had his eye on him for a while, so I'm not surprised in the end.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you, James. I wasn't a fan of the draft. I think they could have gone in a lot of different directions. But let's get your guys' projections. You know, give me a win total and a seed.
Go ahead, Vivek.
All right. So I think I have them winning. You know, I still see them as a 50-win team. So I think they'll be in that sort of, you know, 52, maybe up to 54 wins. I still think that'll be good enough for the 2 seed because the East has gotten that much better. And yeah, I think they'll just beat out Boston.
Let me see. So they won 56 last year. They were like, I think, you know, after a lot of years ago, I think last year they were almost like, you know, almost like crazy healthy. So they'll probably go back down to the mean a little bit and, you know, have some key guys miss games. I think Biombo is going to be a huge loss. And like you said, they're missing 3-point shooting of Scola. I'll go 51 wins just to be nice. I don't want Toronto fans to yell at me.
Well, the one thing I'll remind you of, I mean, in terms of the health, just want to quickly mention, Damari Carroll only played 26 games last year.
Oh, so, wow, you know what? That's twice already. I put my foot in my mouth because, yeah, I said earlier about how the defense wasn't good. So I completely forgot about Damari Carroll not playing a lot of games. And, you know, even when he came back, he wasn't himself. So that kind of mitigates a lot of things we talked about earlier as far as who they lost. Because, yeah, he's a great versatile player. I completely just – that spaced me altogether. I'm going to stick with 51, though, because I'm stubborn. But, that makes the outlook a little bit is the fact that they'll have him all year in the training camp.
So 51, and is that finishing second, third?
I'm going to say third. I think Boston might leapfrog them this year. They're going to be playing hard, and they got a lot to prove. And that's just maybe hometown bias as far as being a fan. But, yeah, I'll say they finish third.
All right, well, that's a perfect transition because next up is Boston. 48-34 last year, lost in the first round and 6 to Atlanta. Obviously, huge signing of Al Horford, drafted Jaylen Brown third, a lot of debate there. Start with you, James. You know, give us a little bit more about the offseason because I know they had a lot of draft picks and your thoughts on it.
I'll say this, the Al Horford signing was a nice cherry on top of what had been a not very great Sunday. I'm thrilled with the draft that Boston had. So Jaylen Brown was the big shocker. I wasn't too upset with that one, though. I can live with that. I was hoping for Marquise Chris because I think he's one of those tremendous, like, who knows what the upside is. Like, it's, you know, it's interstellar, but I get it. It's a risky pick. So I think Jaylen Brown's gonna be a good pro. The rest of the draft they could put in the dumpster, except for Demetrius Jackson. I think he's gonna be a fan favorite quickly. They drafted my man. What's his name? Gershon. What's the kid's name? Yeah, this is compelling radio here. They Gershon Yabusele, and with the intent of him being like a Draymond light, and he's gonna be playing overseas. And yeah, a couple more picks and Ante Zizek, whatever. I wasn't pleased with the draft, but only because I'm selfish. I want everything. The big signing, of course, was bringing in Al Horford. Al Horford's one of the most underrated players in the NBA, and more than just adding talent, it gives them an actual like a center of the universe to work around. Isaiah Thomas, for all his talents, is still just a high volume, undersized point guard. They actually have a legit like. Well-respected NBA star to build the offense around now, and that means something. So the offseason turned out to be pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, that was huge. I want to ask you, I mean, they obviously have Isaiah Thomas, but what are your thoughts on Chris Dunn? I mean, I would have considered taking him there. I just think he was clearly the best available, somebody who might be a star. Like you said, Thomas, I mean, I don't see that as so much redundancy because Thomas can be used as a scorer, energy person. In the long run, is that something they should have considered?
I'm going to say this, and it's like you read my mind, and I actually wrote a piece about this over at B-Ball Breakdown. You guys don't forget to tune in there. That the clock is ticking for Boston right now because in just 2 years, in two summers, 2018, Isaiah is a great deal. He's only making $6.5-7 million a year right now. In 2.5 years, that's done. He's looking for almost max money, you know. And same thing with Avery Bradley, who's making $8 million this year, next 2 years. In the summer of 2018, he's up for a huge payday. Chris Dunn, I think, has a chance to be one of the best players out of this draft. And that's I think he'll end up being better than Ingram. So I definitely would have been all in on drafting him and figuring out what you can get for Isaiah or convincing Isaiah to move to the bench. Or, at least be tell him he's going to split time in a couple of years. I'd have been all in for that one, but that's just not how Danny Ainge operates. And Isaiah's proven himself as an all-star, so it's kind of hard you got him to the playoffs and he's all-star. So it's really hard to just convince him of that. So I understand why they wouldn't do it, but yeah, in my dream world, that's what they would have done.
I would have loved to be a fly on that wall if they tried to have a conversation with Isaiah, telling him to come off the bench again.
Yeah. I mean, I think it could have been kind of, Minnesota has Ricky Rubio, so a bit, obviously a different, slightly different situation, but, I would have went with just the best available in that case. Vivek, what do you, if you had the play GM, you had the third pick, where would you have done?
I'm actually with James on this one. I really like Chris Dunn. I think he could be the best player in that draft. Ingram, I like Ingram a lot, but obviously he was gone. And I like the Canadian kid, Jamal Murray. I think he can really score. I think when it's all said and done, he might be the best scorer in that draft. So, yeah, I know we disagree on that one, but we'll see.
I want to talk about Brad Stevens. He's considered one of the best coaches. What does he do specifically, James, on offense and defense that's unique? Is it a system? Break that down.
Yeah, it is. It's a very – I hate it sounds so cliche saying it. It's a very modern system of basketball. modern theory of basketball where they play fast, they get up and down the court, they want to shoot a lot of threes, and you know they get them in drag transition, they get them in delay transition, pull-ups. Isaiah Thomas is a master finding those open threes in like, you know, sloppy transition. They want to move the ball from side to side. They don't run a lot of post-ups. They don't really try to pick out mismatches, but they will, you know, they got guys going for duck ends, and he runs a very clever offense where you can watch some of the off-ball stuff, and just every now and then I catch glimpses of they run back screens, little misdirections, guys cutting baseline, it's a high energy offense pretty much. His wing guys, they want to move the ball on the perimeter and attack on the catch. They try to attack the closeout. I think if we had better 3-point shooting, the season would have went even better than it did last year, because even though they shot a lot of threes, they didn't shoot them very well. So he gets guys to play hard. He maximizes all the talent he has. He puts guys in positions to succeed. And you can see, I mean, Amir Johnson, people thought he was almost done in Toronto because he's been dealing with injuries. But he has a second lease on life. He looks great under Brad Stevens. He's just one of those coaches that seems to get it. And I really think he's probably like a top 3 or 4 coach, even if the record didn't show it yet.
Yeah, I wanted to ask both you guys. I'm very into X's and O's and coaching. And again, I think in the East, especially, like a lot of these coaches are people say, oh, he's a great coach. You know, Frank Vogel, Brad Stevens, Budenholzer in Atlanta. Dwayne Casey's getting a lot of respect recently. Do you feel like Stevens is a cut above? Start with you, James, and then I want to hear both of you guys.
And it's funny because he doesn't quite have the resume of the really elite coaches. But we all know who the best is. It's going to be Pop, and we know that Carlisle has earned his moniker as a wizard. He makes like the best out of absolute crap. But I think Stevens has proven himself in his first 3 years to be a cut above than maybe the, or at least in the conversation with the very best coaches in the league.
Okay, so probably top 5 and potentially top 3.
I would say top, me personally, and this is gonna call me biased, I would say there's only like maybe Pop, I'm trying to think of what other coach I really take above him.
Carlisle.
Carlisle, he's proven himself, and I can't really think of anybody else. I would say definitely. All right, that's he's top 3, at least top 5 to me.
Wow. So you put him over Tibbs?
I would put him over Tibbs.
Okay, you got to elaborate on that.
Okay, well, see, this is my thing, and I love what Tibbs does. I love what he did with Chicago. He steps into a playoff team. And he molded them. He made them better. But he did step into a playoff team. He took a playoff team and made them a better playoff team. We saw Stevens take a team that was supposed to be nothing. They were basically, you know, making moves to do nothing. And he brought in a point guard who was a third string point guard, you know, on a $6 million contract, because $6 million deal, because he was a backup and wasn't wanted in Phoenix. And he turned that and Jay Crowder into a playoff team. And the next year they won 48 wins. I mean, that's I get it. It's not, it doesn't have the same cachet as Tibbs, and he doesn't scream on the sidelines, and you know, he doesn't have this lock, but he turns, look, Kelly Olynyk was like by the numbers one of the best defenders, big men defenders in the league last year. And it's Kelly Olynyk playing for Brad Stevens. So it takes a while, I think, for reputation to catch up to reality. I think we're going to be talking about these things in the next couple of years, as far as like, you know, guys' defensive numbers under him, and we'll see.
What about you, Vivek? Where do you put Brad Stevens kind of in the coaching landscape?
I don't know if I put him quite as high as James yet. I think for me, he's got to get more of a resume. I think the other thing I want to see too with him is, you know, I think he's shown he's great at sort of almost setting that sort of college mindset and everyone plays hard and everyone plays together. I'd love to see him with a bona fide superstar and how he manages that. I think that'd be sort of the next step in his coaching development if Boston can pull off that big deal. But as a coach, I mean, I'd probably say, you know, he's definitely top 7 or 8. I'd have to go through the names and sort of make a list to give you a definitive number.
Yeah, It's kind of hard. Like, if you go through the East, I mean, I named a few before, and I didn't even mention Stan Van Gundy or Steve Clifford, who certainly
did. Steve Kerr.
Right. And I think, you know, I don't know if some of these coaches in the East, this might be my theory. Let me know what you guys think. But maybe they get in some ways, the East has less talent. And so these coaches who produce, you know, 45 win teams in the East, it's kind of, they're given the credit of doing a lot with not much. And I think I can think of five or six coaches that I just mentioned, kind of all in the Eastern Conference, who kind of have this rep as being great coaches. I'm wondering, do they almost get a bump because there's just less talent in the East?
Well, I mean, shouldn't they get a bump, though, if that's the case? If their teams just aren't as talented, but they're still winning, you know, 45, 46, 48, 50 games? Because, I mean, they don't have the superstars on their – because, yeah, the West has all the power. So, I mean, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I mean, I do think they should get a bump. It's just – it's hard to evaluate because if you – you know, I guess we just don't know if you put Steve Kerr, let's say, coaching the Pistons. Did they make the playoffs last year?
I mean, we already know that Steve Kerr's claim to be a great coach is a little bit – not bogus, but he missed more than half of last season, and they had a better winning percentage when he was out. So we can – what you're saying has a lot of merit as far as talent versus coaching. Steve Kerr, hey, great. He has the reputation, and his team wins a lot. But, I mean, he got outcoached by Ty Lue in the finals. It's let's say it.
Yep. Yeah, that's, I mean, true. Yeah, that decision to put Festus in the game, I'll never understand it late in the fourth quarter. But yeah, I don't know. I just think that's interesting. I do think they should get the bump because there's less talent in the East, but I just don't know how we could like fairly evaluate, like comparing, even if you think of like Mike Malone in Denver, he has a good reputation. You know, he doesn't really have much to show for it, but he's always, so far he's going to have the excuse of he's coaching in the West. So it's hard to really tell, right?
Yeah. I mean,
go ahead, Vivek.
Did you want to go ahead? Okay.
No, go ahead, man.
I was just going to say, I mean, if you look at Michael Malone, I mean, I think that was probably the last time Sacramento was at 500. So, I mean, it still makes zero sense to me in terms of why he got fired. You know, that owner up in Sacramento is giving me a bad name. But... I mean, in terms of evaluating the bump that the East gets, I mean, we've also got to keep in mind that they're going up against the East more often as well, right? It'd be a lot easier to evaluate if you could just see the record against West teams and sort of see what teams are doing against each of them. So, yeah, I think that it's really difficult to evaluate, you know, how much credit you give for the bump of doing it with less talent versus, you know, playing weaker teams more often.
Well, I mean, we also look at stuff like, you know, I mean, do they lose games that they should win? You know, we can look at teams and say, all right, well, they should win this game, that game. And I mean, hey, Boston didn't lose a lot of games that they should win. And then they won some games they shouldn't have. We see the in-game adjustments, out of timeout things and what they run off of fast break. So, yeah, we can make judgments. I understand it's hard to balance it out our judgments with the talent of the team, but we can watch a guy coach for a little while and figure out if he's a good coach or not.
Yeah, and I think we'll find out a lot this year in the East because I think there's going to be a lot of teams finishing within one or two games of each other, and I really do think coaching will make the difference. But want to move on to quickly on the Celtics. Are they one player away from realistically being able to contend? And if so, is there any realistic midseason trade that could really speed up their timeline? You mentioned like they really only have 2 years in terms of contracts, in terms of a window. Is there a trade?
Danny Ainge is being the gambling man, hoping he comes across one of those moves that you know, a star is upset, a guy just has to move, or, you know, he's not promising to re-sign. And, like, they almost had Russell Westbrook, I'm pretty sure. And I'm sad for Boston that he didn't make the move, and I'm happy for OKC that Russell re-signed there. But, I mean, it's tough. I don't want the Okafor. I don't want Jahlil Okafor there. maybe Nerlens Noel, because I know that he's, you know, he's going to be hitting free agency in a couple of years. They got a log jam in Philly. Maybe they can package something with picks and a couple young players to get Nerlens Noel in town. I think he'd play well with Al Horford. Jimmy Butler, we heard the rumblings all summer, and now everything seems to calm down. If things don't go well with Dwayne Wade and Rondo, they might think about cutting bait there too and moving on from him. So we always hear the DeMarcus Cousins, right? I don't think DeMarcus and Al Horford work well together, but, I mean, talent is talent, and that's what you want, the most talent. So there's moves out there. The chance of them happening, though, that's the thing. There's, I think, a pretty narrow chance.
Right, and so, I mean, it sounds like, you know, you guys both have Boston and Toronto, 2-3. So just, you know, wrapping up with them too, Vivek, is there any scenario, and you can go back Toronto or Boston, to challenge Cleveland?
Is there any scenario? Yeah, there's the one where, you know, Kyrie busts a kneecap or something happens to LeBron. That's about it.
I was gonna disagree with you there. Let's say we, you know, the term is barring injury. If Cleveland's relatively healthy by the time playoffs roll around and nobody has anything that's major lingering on them and they're all playing, they're gonna be in the finals again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean everyone's playing for second then in the East.
Yeah. I look at Toronto when they played Cleveland, and their four losses in the series were by a combined 114 points.
Jesus.
So, yeah, I mean, and yeah. I think everyone sees Toronto taking a step back. So, I don't see anything changing.
Man, yeah. I mean, yikes. It's kind of depressing. I mean, because we already have, like, the Warriors out west. And now, you know, it doesn't really seem like there'll be a serious challenger out east. But let's move on to the Knicks. 32-50 last year. Obviously, huge offseason. D. Rose, Noah, Courtney Lee, Randy Jennings.
Eli, time out. We got to give our predictions, bro. We didn't give our Boston predictions.
Oh, man. Sorry, I stuck with the seating, but I didn't get the win totals. Viva, win total for Boston.
I think they'll get to 50 this year. I'll give them 50 or 51 this year.
James? I'm gonna like, hey, if I said that Toronto's gonna get 51, I gotta give them at least 52, so they'll finish up second. I wouldn't be surprised though I wouldn't be surprised if they won 46. They might, the win and loss record might not show up, but they're gonna be a better team next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's hard to predict who will finish second or third, but it does seem like Boston has, you know, the higher ceiling. All right, so for the second time, we're moving on to the Knicks, 32-50. Lot to talk about here, both on the court and off the court, as James, you were mentioning earlier, with the continued ludicrous statements that Derrick Rose keeps making. But obviously, Brandon Jennings, Noah, Courtney Lee, Derrick Rose – added to the mix. They lost Robin Lopez in the trade with Chicago. Vivek, let's start with you. Is this a circus show or is this for real?
I don't know if I'll go all the way and say they're for real. I mean, at best, they could be maybe the 5 or 6 seed at best if everything goes right with Derrick Rose. But the big thing for me, the two signings are Noah and Courtney Lee, because those are two real solid glue guys that can bring a team together. Courtney Lee, he's been on winning teams, I think, pretty much since his rookie season. And I think he's just one of those guys that you put him on the team, he's like a Shane Battier, right? He just does the right things, the little things, keeps everyone happy. The question is going to be Derrick Rose. I think Carmelo impressed me last year in terms of, you know, getting Porzingis involved and taking on that leadership role. So I see him being more of a leader again. I think the big question mark is Derrick Rose.
James, I am going to plug, because I did hear you on a podcast. I think it was a month back, and you had some pretty strong statements about the Knicks. Give us your take.
I'm not walking back on them. So I don't remember what I said, because I always have some strong takes. But the more I look at them, and I think Vivek hit the nail on the head. Guys like Noah and Courtney Lee can be stabilizing presences on a franchise. So that was a good move. I didn't like them just giving up on Robin Lopez like that, because I think he's a quality starting for Chris Stapps. But okay, that's fine. Noah and Courtney Lee could be really good. I don't think Derrick Rose will ever return that MVP kind of form. My only issue now is there's only one basketball. Rose needs the ball in his hands. Melo needs the ball in his hands. Chris Stapps needs touches and stuff, because we're trying to develop him to a superstar. We all want him to be all galaxy. It's one of those things where it's a weird juxtaposition of, yes, they're trying to win now. They want to make the playoffs because that's what New York does. But then they got this superstar in waiting who I think he needs patience. I think he needs an ecosystem where he can come along at his own pace. I saw already people talking about, maybe they can bring Chris Stapps off the bench. And, so if this is what you're doing with your franchise big man, because Carmelo Anthony has the knees of an 80-year-old, then something's not right. So, but I think they'll be better than they were last year, of course, but I don't see the playoffs or anything in their future.
Yeah, and I want to talk about what it's going to look like on the court. They brought in Jeff Hornacek. He played fast in Phoenix, but he did use a lot of triangle concepts. That's kind of, if you read his interviews, it's kind of the impression you get. He won't, because he definitely will be using it. I actually think Rose good in the triangle. I think he, like you said, there's only one ball, and I think they need a system in order to make it work. I think otherwise it would devolve into Derrick Rose, running pick and roll with Noah, and we saw really how that turned out in Chicago. And I'm talking post injuries. It's just, wasn't efficient. I think at one point his shooting percentage in the lane was equivalent of like D League players. I think if they do run the triangle, that actually would benefit, the need to move the ball. And I think it does set up Porzingis and Melo on really good spots on the floor for their game. Start with you, James. What do you think about the X's and O's there?
I just don't know how it's going to work. There's just not a lot of, there's not too, it's, you got a couple ball dominant guys. I believe in Jeff Hornacek. I think he got a raw deal in Phoenix. I think those players, and this, it was just bad chemistry. It's just bad juju all around in Phoenix. It didn't reflect well on him, but that's not his fault, even though he's obviously part of that. So we'll see. I can't get away from the fact that the Knicks have been the Knicks for so long that when they make big wholesale changes like they did this summer, I can't give them the benefit of the doubt anymore. So X and O's wise, I mean, hey, Derrick Rose is going to control the ball. I think Brandon Jennings is a capable backup, and I support plug off the bench. Carmelo just needs to stay healthy. He's shown he can, his catch and shoot game can be incredible. So that's a good thing with him. His usage can drop some. He's not going to need to pound the life out of the ball if Derrick Rose is drawing attention. And I mean, hey, Noah's doing the dirty work. So I guess Chris Stapps has to kind of fit in where he gets in, which, I don't know. I'll say I'm not going to write him off yet, but I got to see it work. I got to see it in action before I can really just be all in on the Knicks.
Yeah, and Vivek, what about defensively? Because I think if they stay healthy, I mean, they're going to be able to score. How do you think they'll be able to do defensively?
I think they could do okay defensively just because of Porzingis and Noah in the middle. I mean, those are two pretty agile guys, so they can cover the paint pretty easily. And then you got Courtney Lee out on the perimeter. Derrick Rose and Melo, that's sort of where the question marks come in, right? How tough is Melo going to be? If he's playing small forward, that's going to be easier than him playing the four. So it could be an advantage. It could be a disadvantage because he's obviously slower now at his age. So overall, I think they could be okay. Jeff Hornacek's teams weren't that great defensively. So I don't know how much you can expect from them, but I could see them being, in the teens defensively.
James, you want to jump in here? Because I think this is where we have a lot of problems.
that's where I think they're going to really kind of fall apart, man. Hey, look, Melo's never been a lockdown defender. Rose has been a very tepid defender. Lee and you can't build a strong. Yes, you can frame a strong defense around two strong defenders like Courtney Lee and Noah when he's healthy. But we don't know if Noah's going to be that guy again. Chris Stapps has the tools, but I mean, as a second year player, he'll make advances, but he's still, you know, a second year young player. I think that's where they're going to have some troubles.
Yeah, and I think defensively is where they, you know, may really regret the hire of Hornacek. Again, I agree with what you said. I think he did a solid job in Phoenix. I think he's a fine coach, but you know, there are rumors that Tibbs' first choice was the Knicks. I mean, Frank Vogel, you know, he became available much later, but I think they would really need somebody who's focusing almost exclusively on defense to make it work.
Yeah, and you know what? Who knows? They might have an assistant lined up for that, and I haven't been paying attention to their coaching staff. Maybe one of you guys knows better. Maybe they have some guy, you know, assistant who's already dedicated to working on the defensive side, and they might have the next Tibbs on the sideline. We'll see.
Yeah. Will the Knicks make the playoffs, Vivek?
I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say they squeeze in at the 8 seed.
All right, and James?
Okay, well, my question to you, Vivek, real quick, then who drops out? And I'm going to say no. I'm going to say they'll be greatly improved, maybe win 35, maybe 37, but they'll just miss out. They'll be like the 9 or 10 seed.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, who does drop out?
I think Charlotte dropped out.
Oh.
Okay. I think those losses with Jeremy Lin and Courtney Lee and Al Jefferson, I think they're going to feel the effects. I think they really missed out there not getting adequate replacements.
I actually agree about the Charlotte thing.
Yeah, I think that makes three of us. I do think the losses were too big. And also not just, I mean, we're not talking about these teams in this podcast, but I think, you know, Milwaukee didn't make it last year. They were a playoff team 2 years ago. Washington was. And then, you know, now we're talking about the Knicks. And obviously the Bulls missed the playoffs. And so that's four teams that I think are in the mix. I'm not saying all four of those will make the playoffs. But if you're trying to think about which teams, you know, could those four teams replace? I think Charlotte's definitely there. Off the top of your guys' head, start James. Who else? Who else could potentially fall?
So I'm with him on Charlotte. Who else? Oh yeah, Miami. Hey, Miami's gonna miss the playoffs. I'm pretty sure Miami's gonna miss the playoffs. So I think two are dropping out, but I think the Wizards are gonna be greatly improved. I think the Mahimney signing is a little underrated. He's going to bring a lot to that team, what they need. Nothing, you know, he won't blow you away in the box scores, but he'll give them an interior defender and somebody can, you know, run the pick and roll and, you know, dunk on people's heads that they need. So I think Washington
James,
back
quickly
in,
on the Wizards, do you think too much is being made of this whole Wall Beal deal?
You know what? Where there's smoke, there's fire. So I look at it both ways. On one hand, hey, and Eli, don't worry about it. I set this up for like 2 hours, so we can go over when we need to. So we're not going to be pressed for time. But on one hand, we do know that some writers like to kind of sensationalize, and we know that, you know, there's some things that do get splashy headlines. And I'm not saying that, you know, the Washington writers and bloggers are making this up by any means, because those quotes actually sound like there's some beef. Not even beef. There's some tension and friction between the two. There's actually quotes from both of them. So I think it's a real thing. And it would kind of explain a lot, because that team's chemistry just seemed, their body language and stuff, which I hate that we're all armchair psychiatrists and psychologists now. But, yeah, something just seemed to be off with them last season. So it's a real thing. And obviously both of them said, hey, we need to get better and get past this. So it's legit.
I think the change, forget even Scott Brooks, I think Whitman just did not – again, armchair psychologist, but, you know, that stuff does matter. And I think Whitman just was not a good fit there for the personalities on that team. I think that's going to make a big difference.
Agreed. It's funny because I saw people trying to talk themselves into Whitman when they extended him him like just 2 years ago, and I was never a fan of his. So yeah, I think Brooks is a good coach for them. They're gonna get back in the playoffs this year, and not even like just barely squeak in. They're gonna be in the middle of the pack.
They're good enough. They have the talent. It's just the chemistry, right? That's what we got to see.
Yeah, chemistry. And I think they did. Go ahead, Eli.
Oh no, finish on the Wizards because I was gonna bring up another team.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say not just I think it was yes the chemistry, but also we know that Gortat has a little bit of that old school center to him that the modern NBA mm-hmm. is kind of moving away from, and they were kind of soft in the middle, and you know they sat him at crunch time and stuff. So yeah, it's a little bit of both. They're gonna be primed to turn the page after last season this year.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if we're making the case for how the Knicks could make the playoffs, again, I kind of feel if they were to make it, it's more so because other teams fall in a way. I agree. I think their win total be right around 40, 42. Charlotte could fall. You know, I'm curious your thoughts, since we do have time. I'm not so sure the moves, it's similar to Charlotte, I'm not so sure the moves Indiana and Atlanta made really made them better. I think anytime you add players, you have that first people say, oh, that, you know, they're adding a Jeff Teague or they're adding a Dwight Howard. But again, when you get back to how that's actually going to look on the court, I'm not sure those teams will be as good as they were last year.
Okay. Now we can go to, I'll go to blows with you over the Indiana thing. Cause Paul George is my new, he's my new player crush. As far as I think he's going to really skyrocket as far as where we consider him as an elite player. But I gotta begrudgingly admit it. George Hill, I think, was the best kind of fit beside a player like George Hill, Paul George. And yes, talent wise and maybe you know ceiling wise, Jeff Teague is a step up. But for that team, I think it might be at the best lateral move, maybe a step back. They lost Mahimni, which I think is going to be a bigger deal than they know. And we're not sure if Miles is ready to be that rim protecting big man they need. So yeah, I really believe in Paul George.
Yeah, and I do too, but I mean, Jimmy Butler versus Paul George, that's for another time. But when I saw the Bulls miss the playoffs with somebody of, you know, Jimmy Butler's category, it kind of changed my perspective on that, you know, in terms of just like one player like that being able to be the difference of making the playoffs.
Damn it. That's a good touche. Damn it.
Yeah, so, I mean, with the Pacers, I completely agree that, you know, George Hill is the better fit. And now you've still got Monte Ellis in there, and I just don't know how it's going to work with Ellis and Teague. I don't know what Thaddeus Young's going to bring to the team, playing for a competitive team again. And again, their three-point shooting, you look at it with, I mean, Teague shot 40% last year, but he's not a 40% shooter. And you look at years past, he's been, you know, in the low 30s. So I think that was a bit of an anomaly. So you got Teague, you got Thaddeus Young, and you got Ellis. I don't know how the spacing works there. I don't know how much better they can be with Nate McMillan instead of Frank Vogel. So all these things, I think next year there might be some growing pains with that roster.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. The coaching change, too. We'll see how that goes. But I think overall that we're in agreement that there are some teams that could drop. So the Knicks, you know, they're probably in that like 7 to 10 range. But there are some teams that could kind of open the door for them. Any other thoughts on the Knicks before we move on?
No, I agree. I mean, if Charlotte and Miami drop out, then there's a window for them to get in. I mean, I think I agree with James that Washington's probably going to pick up one of those spots. And then we'll see. I mean, do the Pistons slip a little bit? Do the Pacers slip a little bit? I mean, so that's sort of where the window is. I agree with you, Eli. It's going to be more other teams slipping back for them to sneak in as opposed to them sort of taking a spot.
I'm going to say that, yeah, Washington's going to be in, but it's not going to be the Knicks. I think Milwaukee might get it together. I think Parker and Giannis might lead them back to the playoffs. So, yeah, I think Knicks will be outside looking in.
All right, staying in New York, Brooklyn Nets, 21-61 last year. Obviously missed the playoffs. They're bringing in a new coach, Kenny Atkinson, assistant from Atlanta, signed Jeremy Lin. Caris LeVert, the 20th pick, thought that was a really interesting draft pick. He was injured at Michigan, but he was a lottery pick before he got hurt on most boards. Vivek, start with you. What do you think of Brooklyn's offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I think the two things that stand out to me are the offer sheets that didn't come through with Tyler Johnson and then with Alan Crabb. I think you could see that they were trying to sort of at least put some pieces on the board and maybe trying to find something that would work around Brook Lopez. But now with those two guys out of the window, I don't really see much happening this year. They're probably the worst team in the league as constructed. I don't see anything out of them that's going to be too positive. Jeremy Lin, I mean, I don't think you're looking to build around him. Brook Lopez going forward, I don't know. If they can get some picks or, you know, some young players for him before the trade deadline, that might have to be something they look into as well.
What's your take, James?
I give them a he might be absolutely right. They might be the worst team in the league this year, but I still give them like a B plus, A minus for their offseason because they were locked in. They had a couple terrible years where their Prokhorov really overstepped his bounds and he was dreaming big and he failed spectacular. He failed spectacularly. They were in salary cap hell. They had a bloated roster. They gave up all their picks. So they had a very smart offseason. I'm not sure why Brook Lopez is still around. And maybe I think by the All-Star break, he might not be in Brooklyn anymore. But I really love the moves they made. And we keep saying they might be the worst team in the league, but sure, Jeremy Lin is a pro, and he was really good in spots last year. Caris LeVert, like you said, he would have been a lottery pick. Rondae Hollis Jefferson can be almost like a Michael Kidd-Gilchrist type of impact player. They swung and missed on a couple signings because they just had money to burn and they said why not. But they, you know, they're young. They have some decent talent and guys who will get minutes and get to prove themselves. And I like what they did. I like what they did. Isaiah Whitehead too. Watch him. He's gonna be nice.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely give them an A for effort. I just think they've been so handcuffed by what's happened in the past that there was only so much they could accomplish this offseason.
Definitely. They made lemonade, though. They made lemonade out of the terrible lemons they had. They made some pretty, like, tepid lemonade, but they did the best they could.
Yeah,
I actually think Caris LeVert's going to be really good. You know, assuming he's healthy. I don't know about this year, but I think their draft was just phenomenal. And he's 6 foot six, 6'7", long, can shoot the three. You know, the way he drives, it's impossible to contest. I think that was huge. But I want to get your opinion on Coach Atkinson. I haven't heard so much about him. I honestly don't know what to expect. Vivek, have you heard anything?
From what I've read, he's not going to be bringing in a specific system or anything. He's supposed to be a great motivator, someone that, you know, sort of brings the lunch pail and gets everyone to work hard. So I think he said that, you know, again, this is about that magic word, the process, and, you know, sort of building a foundation of guys that work hard, that, you know, when you watch the Brooklyn Nets, you're going to watch a team that competes. So I think that's sort of the main goal for next season, and that's what he's going to bring to the table.
James, I know you brought up Brook Lopez. What do you think they should do with him?
I mean, he's 28. He's in the prime of his career. He's been healthy the last couple of years. It's not – now, I guess if he's fine with staying around for a rebuild, hey, I guess what are you going to do? But it seems like his talents would be a boon somewhere else, right? So if they can move him for picks, find a team that either has, you know, some picks and some, you know, expiring contracts and get more cap space, some season for him, then they should probably move him. You know, it'd be fair to him and for them also to open more playing time. And hey, I was gonna say they're tanking, but they have nothing to tank for since Boston says thanks. So, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, just where the league's going in terms of spacing and the way, like you said, modern offenses. I mean, is he a starter on a contender?
I would say, okay, so this is my thing about players like him, and he's kind of a hybrid because he can step out. He can step out to about 18 feet. He has a nice jump shot, but he's not mobile on defense, and he's one of those shot blockers by position, by proxy, because he's so tall. He's in the middle of the lane. He'll get a couple shots, and you can find a way to use that. So if you can get him no, I'll say just no. For the guys we consider contenders, no. I'm trying to think what team could use a player like Brook Lopez, and I'm just drawing up and actually be really competitive. And I don't know, with the Wizards, he'd work well with John Wall, getting him the ball and, you know, some guys spacing around him. But is that a contender? No, it's not. But he's useful. I mean, a guy who can give you 20 and 20 and 8 any night on decent efficiency, that's useful. Look what it just got your boy DeRozan. So, yeah, there's a place for him in the league.
Yeah, I think he's like his numbers and his production is so high, and I don't think like teams value that position well. So I think on the market he's kind of a misfit in that sense. Vivek, what do you think for Brooklyn? You said worst team in the league. Can you give us a win total?
Let's see. They won 21 last year, and they definitely got worse. Philly won 10 last year. I don't think they're that bad. I'm gonna go with 17.
Wow, that's pretty harsh.
So, yeah, I keep trying to talk myself into them being better than Philly this year. And it's – I mean, look, they got a pro. Brook Lopez can really play. Jeremy Lin can really play. But then they have Anthony Bennett who can't play. And some guy named Bo Beach. You guys ever heard of that guy named Bo Beach? I have no clue who Bo Beach is, but he's on the roster. Chris McCullough can really play from out of Syracuse. Okay, yeah, they're not going to be very good. So I'm going to give him 20. I'll give him 20. I'll give him 20 just because I have no clue. Hey, who knows? What if Coach Atkinson just makes this guy a scrappy bunch and somehow they rally around? No, okay, 20. Okay.
I honestly thought the scrappiness would get them to 17.
You're right. The more you guys are – no, just the more you guys are talking about them, I'm – yeah, it's not going to be pretty.
So let me ask you guys this. So we know Brook Lopez is probably going to give you about 20 a game. We know that Lin, he's going to have high usage, get a lot of shots up. He might give you 15, and that's going to be pushing for him. Who is going to be their third highest scorer, and how many is he going to score a night? I'm looking at the roster right now. Hey,
they've still got Bogdanovich, right?
They do. Bojan.
Yeah, so I think he'll be the third best scorer.
Okay, what's it going to average? Over under 15. Over under 16.
Under.
I'm taking the over under. Under?
Under, yeah. I think he'll get to about that 13, 14 mark.
He's going to get a lot of shots. That's the thing. These guys are going to get shots up because it doesn't really matter.
It's a good thing that Atkinson doesn't have a system. Lin's just going to be running up and down.
Hey, you know what? Lin's really good in the pick and roll, man. I think they're going to have one signature win this year. Sure, they might only win 20, but they're going to have one win over a good team. Just everything's going to come together for one game. It's going to be fun. Anthony Bennett. Anthony Bennett's 23. This is his last stop probably, right? Is there any hope, especially I'm asking you, Vivek, is there any hope for Anthony Bennett?
I want to say yes, but I think the answer is no. The honest answer is no. I don't see a motor in him. Like even the little bit that he played in Toronto last year, even when he played in the D League, he just doesn't have that drive. And you need that in the NBA. It's cutthroat. I mean, there's only 30 teams and there's only, you know, 12 to 15 spots on the roster. So I don't think he has that drive to, I mean, forget living up to a number one pick. I don't think he has what it takes to stay in the league.
Yeah. I feel bad for the kid. I feel bad for him.
I just pulled up the roster and I do see Bo Beach. I thought that was a last name. I guess that's first and last name. But shout out to him, North Florida, making 500 grand this year. So, I mean,
he's doing a lot more than us.
I mean, just
hey, you know,
scrolling
what?
Through the roster.
Bo Beach is a 6'8" two guard, so they might have unearthed a gem there. I'm trying to find a picture of Bo Beach right now.
I just realized they took Louis Scola off us too.
Oh yeah. Yeah, Scola's there. So they got a couple of vets, man. I mean, I know Scola's just there for veteran presence, but there's gonna be a game where you guys know about Scola and his God mode. He's gonna have a game where he kind of catches fire and everything goes well. They're gonna have at least one good win this year. It's gonna be fun.
Did they get Randy Foy?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did.
Oh.
Wow. Trevor Booker. Maybe. Trevor Booker with the high motor. He's there.
This looks bad. I mean, it's bad. I don't even want to go down through the roster. It's I think we might have been generous at 17 and 20, honestly, looking down the roster.
Okay, I'll do it since you don't want to do it. Markel Brown, the 6'3" shooting guard. There's Joe Harris, who the most nondescript today. Sean Kilpatrick. Then we got guys like Ejidijus Makavicius. That sounds like something you'd make up on NBA 2K when you simulate about five seasons out. That's the draft picks. Henry Sims. I'm to the point where I can't stand Grievous Vasquez. Just to see his name on rosters. It pisses me off for some reason. That's an all-star roster there, dude. Markel Brown.
Man.
Honestly, their rookies might be their best players, you know. Obviously, besides Lynn and Brooke Lopez.
I really like the Karras.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say I really like you guys already kind of hit it and killed it by Caris LeVert. I think as long as they keep him healthy and take their time with him, he's gonna be a really good NBA player. And I think I already said this, Isaiah Whitehead can ball. Yeah.
Yeah, you know the best thing that might happen to them is a Brooke Lopez injury and just get these young guys to just play.
Hey, all right, you gotta stop this now. Knock on wood. All three of us knock on wood. He had too many injury issues in his past. We can't wish that upon Brooke.
Okay. All right. My bad.
Knock on wood.
Yeah. I mean,
monster.
My bad. I just did.
I mean, if they trade Lopez, they're at Sixers level, right? From the last, you know, couple of years.
Oh yeah, for sure. Maybe worse.
Right. Wow. I think if we talk about him anymore, it's just, I think we got to move on.
Yes. Sorry. Well, yeah, we beat that.
Do not look at a Nets roster.
Well, you know, they might assign Lynn just to have that Brooke Lynn combo.
All right. That's it. We're done talking.
We definitely got to move on. All right. Philly. Go ahead. You had something?
We definitely saved the best for last.
Yeah, Philly.
I'm pissed off about the Brooklyn joke just now. I'm really hot.
I knew it would do that.
All right, 10 wins last year. Draft, Ben Simmons, but other good first-round picks, Luwawu, Korkmaz, two shooters that they got in the 20s, obviously Dario Saric coming over. They signed a couple guards, Bayless, Gerald Henderson, passable, you know, NBA players at least. You give them an A, James?
Oh yeah, that's an easy A. But my only quibbles were just me being selfish. I wanted to see them get Malachi Richardson for some reason. I wanted to see a guy in Philly named Malachi, and I wanted to see them get Kay Felder because I thought Kay Felder would be so much fun running with those guys. So those were my only two quibbles. But yeah, they had a great offseason, man. Ben Simmons is going to be special. I heard Coach Thorpe, ESPN's Coach Thorpe, actually said that he thought that Ben Simmons might have the fastest hands since Jason Kidd. So he thinks he can be great defensively, wow. Which should give Philly – yeah, that should give Philly fans something to really, like, look forward to, man. That's a high, high, high praise. I like the fact they got a couple of vets in the backcourt. They still need to add some shooting and some, like, real talent around the perimeter. But Gerald Henderson and Jared Bayless, they're NBA players. They're good. We get to see Embiid hit the court event. He's getting ready to hit the court. So, Furkan Korkmaz, I watched a little bit of him. He can really play. I think like Luau looks really, really has a lot of potential. Even though he can't dribble, he dribbles like his hands are frying pans. But that's all right. Right now, it's nothing but positivity in Philly, man. So yeah, they got an easy A.
Do you think are those two guys gonna play this year, or are they gonna stash one of them?
I'm pretty sure they're already working on stash one. I kind of was paying attention to that earlier, but I don't know. But yeah, you probably can't play all those guys, right? They already got log jam in the backcourt. They're ready to start getting those guys minutes, and they got a couple of vets to play. So at least one of them is probably going to get stashed, which is fine. You know, right now Philly can do almost no wrong.
Yeah, I mean, great offseason. And then, as you mentioned, getting to how to look on the court, a lot of bigs. They're obviously shopping aggressively, but in for the time being, how do they make that work? What kind of rotation do they need? I think Brett Brown, just from the way he likes to play, it's going to be a challenge for him because I think ideally Brett Brown's kind of a four out, one in motion kind of coach. He has a very different roster. Start with you, Vivek. How does he solve this problem?
Well, I mean, just quickly going back on their offseason, I think easy A, but I think the one thing that would make it an A+ is sort of figuring out that Nerlens Noel, Julio Okafor, and Joel Embiid situation. I think that'll go a long way to helping Brett Brown figure out exactly what he's going to do and how he's going to manipulate this roster to get some wins this season. Ben Simmons is obviously going to see a lot of the ball playing up top, and then everyone's going to play off that. So I think it could be an interesting lineup when they have, Simmons and Henderson and Covington and Noel and Embiid, because defensively, that's a lot of big guys that can move around quick. And then offensively, that's probably, if you've got Henderson and Covington as your two shooters, and then you'd sort of have Simmons just be creative with the rest. So it's going to be interesting. They're going to be a fun team to watch, that's for sure.
James, what do you think on the court?
I think on the court, Brett Brown likes to – he runs a high octane, again, modern offense where – the guys wants to get out and run. He wants to get up a lot of threes and dunks. It's going to be – somebody has to go, and maybe not – but honestly, here's the thing. It doesn't matter, right? Not this year. They have time. They have nothing but time on the books for these guys. But they got five rotation guys in the backcourt with no Embiid, Noel, Okafor, and Dario Saric. Somebody's going to have to go. I think in the long run it's going to be – it's going to be probably Okafor and then maybe Noel too. So it's tough because I don't know can you keep four high quality big men on the roster, but that's not even something to worry about right now. Covington, I think Covington and Jeremy Grant have done that shows the Philly development plan will actually work because those two guys probably on a lot of teams, they would have been out of the rotation. They turned them into actual quality NBA players. Jared Henderson doesn't stretch the floor well enough for me, but I think Jared Bayless does. We didn't even mention Sergio Rodriguez, who can shoot it and is an excellent passer. We're going to see some time. Hopefully, we'll get a time to see Ben Simmons on the court running center. And, with Robert Covington beside him, and they go real small. And then, over time, they can go jumbo, where we might see Embiid with Noel and then Simmons running the three. He has so many options right now. Coach Brett Brown has so many options. He has a whole year to tinker. and figure out what they're going to do. So it's nothing but fun, man. It's going to be nothing but fun to watch those guys on the court this year.
Yeah. I know it's fun to talk about trades, and we're going to get to that in a second, but I don't know. I don't necessarily think it's a problem to have four quality bigs on the roster. Again, I think because of the way NBA offenses are going, people think you really only play one big at a time. So now they have four, but I think they're in a great position to have those four quality bigs, whether they trade them or not. I don't see why you can't. I mean, I think any good roster needs four good big men.
Huh. Okay. I was under the impression that it's more like, and this is a good coach in a good system with the right players, they'll make anything work. But, you know, I was thinking you want your two starters and you want your one rotation guy. And then another, of course, like lesser player to kind of just eat minutes up and or maybe a specialist, a shot blocker or a big man who can shoot threes. But, yeah, I four big men should work and there's no rush. They can run this out for a couple years. And if it doesn't work, somebody starts making noise. And guess what? You know, Philly will move them. So there's right. It's a quibble. Yeah, there's no real I'm nitpicking. There's actually no issues right now in Philly. I love to see the fan base so energized.
Yeah, and I think maybe, you know, I'm originally from Chicago. Maybe it's the Bulls fan in me because of all our injuries, but I just look at that as realistically in a season, you have those four as your big. I mean, somebody's going to get hurt. And really out of those four, none of those guys, you know, are locks to be perennial all-stars. So I think the talk of we got to trade because we got four great guys on our hands, I think it's a bit premature. I think they should wait and see what's really there. But I guess, you know, on the market, that could hurt them, right? If someone doesn't pan out, for example, and they could have gotten better before.
Yeah, I mean, that's a possibility. But, I mean, from Brian Colangelo's time in Toronto, he messed around with the roster season to season, and I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, he gives it this 1 year and then he sort of calls the shots and says, you know, this is where what I see the team as, and this is what I want to see where I want to see the team go. And he chopped and changed the Toronto roster year after year. So I'm interested to see if he's learned from that. He definitely learned from the Bargnani pick and picked the consensus with Ben Simmons. So that was good to see. We'll see.
Well, what about win totals? James, start with you.
So what they won, 10 last year? I don't know. I'm feeling kooky. I'm feeling generous. Let's go 25.
Ooh.
Yeah, I went
pretty
there.
Big jump.
Yeah, let's do it. 25.
That'd be big for them. That's a lot to build off of. I don't know if I'll be that generous. I think there's still, you know, when Ben Simmons is on the court, I still anticipate them backing off him a lot and really daring him to shoot. And I think that'll take away from his passing game too. Or it might not take away from his passing game. Maybe it'll just be like Rondo and I'll just allow him to see the floor better. But I think 20 is sort of where I'd cap it. I don't see them getting any more than that.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
I was going to call him a hater. Philly fans, yeah, he's been a hater. So,
yeah, it's almost a new team, really. I mean, between the draft, Bayless, Henderson, and Bede coming back, I mean, that's, you know, seven players right there.
Yeah, it is. I mean, doubling their win total is still a pretty good accomplishment. So, I mean, I'll give them 20. And then you know, and then the thing is, they're a really young team, so they might play a lot better than 20 wins, but I could see them getting into situations where, you know, it's the last 4 minutes of a game and the other team steps it up just because of their experience and then they fall apart.
Yeah. I also think, you know, Brett Brown, again, I agree, James, player development, I'm convinced. I'm kind of curious to see as they get into more close games, what he can do as a head coach.
Yeah, man. I think that Joel Embiid's going to be second coming on Hakeem. You know, no one's going to be like Ben Wallace. They're going to just take off, man. I have high hopes for him. No, I just I just think just sheer energy and sheer just hustle. They're gonna just really outwork some teams on during the dog days of the season. They're not gonna be the worst team in the league. I think they could, you know, the Lakers are gonna probably take a beating from these guys. I think the Nets are gonna take a couple beating from them. There's some bottom feeders for them to beat up on. They could scrap together 25, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see 25, and I think we, you know, like you said, we beat Brooklyn. We went through that roster, and I think I'm pretty convinced they're going to finish ahead of them now after really thinking it through. So, I mean, that's the Atlantic Division. Any last thoughts on any of these teams, James?
I just think I think the Celtics be really fun to watch. I think Jay Crowder might make it. I almost say Jay Crowder might make an all-star team, but we got Al Horford and Isaiah Thomas to lock that up. So, I just think the Nets are going to be really, really, really bad. The more we talked about it, it'll be.
What about Vivek? Last thoughts?
I'm really looking forward to the Boston-Toronto matchup and seeing how that goes over the season. I think that's going to be really fun to watch. There's going to be a lot of close games, and it's two teams that really scrap, really play hard. So I think that's going to be the most fun basketball to watch. And then the Knicks, I mean, it's either going to be a circus or it's going to be, you know, a rock concert. We'll see which one.
Yeah. So Raptors Celtics potentially be what, Eastern semis preview.
Oh yeah.
Finish 2-3.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure somehow they're going to meet. They should be, right? 2-3.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to – go ahead.
I will say that one thing I'm really excited to see, Carmelo Anthony. I think the last couple of years, you know, the team's been bad. He's ended up injured. He didn't play out the full season. But before the last two seasons, he was playing at almost MVP level, even though his team sucked. And then the year before that, when they were in the playoffs, and they, you know, with Jason Kidd, and he looked tremendous. I think this might be a year where he gets to kind of reestablish himself as a top tier kind of player, because he gets disrespected a lot. He does, because, you know, he's considered one dimensional. He's never really won anything, and, you know, people call him selfish. Whatever, the guy can flat out play. So, healthy this year, having Derrick Rose in town, we're gonna. I think people sometimes forget how good he can be when he gets into a groove, and we're going to see it a couple times this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point, because, I mean, if you look up and down this division, I mean, you know, you can make a case for Lowry, but, you know, when he's healthy, when he's locked in, he's the best player in this division in my mind. And so that's kind of a – right, his health and his performance could – kind of shake up a lot of what we said about the Knicks.
Are we going to get into this now? No, I think Lowry is the best player in the division.
Let's close out on that topic. I think this is a good closing topic. So I said Melo, but I'll let you guys duke this one out. What do you think, Vivek?
I mean, I look at the Boston roster, I don't think anyone's as good as Lowry. The Knicks, you brought up Melo. The Nets, you know, there might be that Bo Beach guy. and then Philly, you know, well, Ben Simmons in a few years, right? So right now, I think Kyle Lowry's the king of the land in the Atlantic. He's just... You know, you look at both sides of the ball, offensively, defensively, his ability to penetrate, shoot threes. And, I mean, if you guys watch Team USA, this guy's a bulldog. Like, he just competes night in, night out. That's the best part about him. I don't know if Melo is up there with him anymore.
All right, so my initial reaction was that, wow. But, I'll say this: if Melo's healthy, I think it's a landslide. It's not even close. I love Lowry, and I love the way he's developed himself into a top tier point guard. But I know we keep adding the caveat about when healthy. Healthy Melo, hands down, I'm taking him over your boy. Taking him over your boy, Kyle Lowry.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I think B-ball break. Did we think we put Lowry ahead in our like group rankings? But I don't know if you watch the Olympics and it kind of
don't let any secrets out now, Eli.
Yeah, what are you doing, bro? What's going on here, man? Spoiler alert: you can't just be telling everybody what our rankings were.
Oh, that didn't come out yet.
Whoops.
Yeah, I don't know. I fall into a bad trap of when I compare players. Maybe this is bad logic, but I look at like even what Melo has done at his best, what he's done on the Olympic team, and do you really think Lowry could do that? You know, and maybe that's a bad way to look at it, but I just don't see Lowry being able to carry a team in that way that Melo has, you know, in certain years for the Knicks and certainly with Team USA.
I'll say this: has Melo taken his team to the conference finals?
Oh, touche.
Touche.
Well, actually, right. Yeah, he did. He did. Yeah, he did it in Denver. Of course, he did. He went to the conference finals, Western Conference finals.
All right, never mind on that, touche.
With Billups, touché, right?
Take it back. Yeah.
Hey, so let me ask you this, though. When's the last time you saw Kyle Lowry rocking straight back braids? Has he ever rocked braids? Melo rocked braids? Exactly. How many gold medals does Lowry have? Exactly.
It's true. I mean, okay. Yeah, those are all fair points. But I'm just saying, if you ask me to start a team for just next season, I'm taking Lowry. I'd rather start a team with Lowry than Melo.
I agree because of the age and the injury factors. That's the only reason.
Just for next season.
I still agree for the age and injury factors. If you can guarantee me Melo will be healthy for that whole season, it's a whole different story. But I agree, age and injury factors.
Yeah, okay. I also think like Toronto, you know, what DeRozan gives you, and certainly during the regular season, I think that changes the argument, you know. If DeRozan isn't there, I mean, I don't know. Are they even a playoff team?
I don't know, because then JV would be more involved. I don't know. Because, I mean, we're talking about you'd still have to come down from 56 to less than 40. So I don't know if they'd become that bad, because Norman Powell is actually pretty good. He'd probably him or Ross would be the starting shooting guard if you take DeRozan out of the picture. I still think they're pretty good.
Here's the dirty little secret: I think they would. You guys explained to me how this works, because your boy DeRozan was a net negative on the court last year. He's been a net negative the last few years, so it's like I understand that you don't play basketball on an analytics page. I get it, and I get that he brings something. I don't take anything away from the fact that being able to score 25 points a night, and you know, yeah, you're eating up offense, but your team needs that offense. It means something, but he's been a net negative. So I mean, it's not hard. It's not hard to see them being a playoff team without him. You know.
Yep.
That's true. I mean, it's almost like, I mean, yeah, and I think you made really good points in favor of Lowry. It's almost like it's kind of sad on Melo's part. I just feel like he should be better, you know, than Kyle Lowry, just from the tools that he has. He should be better, but.
Right. No, I definitely agree with James that I think he's gotten way too much of a bad rap these last few years. I mean, you look at from the time when he came into the league, this guy was making the playoffs and LeBron wasn't, right? And that was all the talk that, you know, Melo's a winner. And ever since he sort of wanted out of Denver and went to New York and things didn't work out. I mean, even initially in New York, things looked good when they made the playoffs and they were going at the Celtics. Well, I mean, I shouldn't say going at the Celtics. It's not like they ever really gave them any trouble. But I think these last few years, he's taken a big hit. But he's still definitely one of the top, I'd say, you know, what, 30 in the league?
Yeah, I think that's safe to say. That's In fact, Knicks fans are probably going to yell at you both for just saying top 30. So, hey, Knicks fans, I'm going to say this. Knicks fans, Melo is a top 8 player in the league. Only Knicks fans listen to that part.
I'm in New York right now, so I got to be careful. I don't know. Had he gone to Chicago in 2014, you know, could he might still be a top 10 player. It's really, I mean, with the circus that the Knicks are, I think it's really hard to judge.
And I'm going to keep harping on it. Even last season when he was healthy, he showed improved floor game. He showed improved passing patience. So it's all about keeping him healthy. If he's healthy, I think, you know, we can't keep him out of the conversation for being a top 15 player again, because the guy can play. He can flat out play. He can. I mean, I think sometimes we go almost too analytical and we start killing guys who can do something like what he does very well. He can just flat out score, and he can score at a level that we saw around him that got to the, you know, got to the playoffs, and they won 50 something wins, 54 wins or something. So it's just tough because you have to so specifically build around him, and he has to be at his optimum. But no, he can play. I like Melo. I've done like a 180 the last couple of years.
All right, so James, I feel like you got to clarify here. Are you going with Lowry or Melo for best player in this division?
Oh, if we're you want a final answer? All right, I'm gonna go Melo. Yeah. Let's do it. All right. New York, stand up. You know what I'm saying? New York, stand up. What's up? I got Melo all day. Madison Square Garden. What?
Brooklyn. It's all good. I got Lowry. The six knows what's up.
Son.
All right, there you have it.
Not me.
Hey, who you got, Eli?
I'm in New York. I got to go Melo. I got to walk up to my apartment tomorrow. So for all the local listeners, of course. I want to believe Melo can get back to that level. And this is the year to do it. So we'll see.
We will see.
All right, guys. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Eli. This was a lot of fun. It was good talking to you.
Hey, James. Everybody, before you guys go, how about this? I'm gonna be a little co-host right now. So go ahead, Vivek. Tell them where they can find you on social media and where can they find your stuff again.
So you can follow me on Twitter at Vivek M. Jacob. And you can always find my stuff on B-Ball Breakdown. I've got my stuff up on studentofthesport.com as well. And that's where you can check me out.
All right. There you guys got it. And how about you, Eli? Social media and where are you writing?
Twitter's Coach Horowitz 13, coach a little high school basketball. And B-Ball Breakdown, of course. And recently started writing at HP Basketball, Hardwood Paroxysm, and Today's Fast Break. What about you, James?
To all the listeners out there, you can find me, James Hollis, Snotty Drippin on Twitter, and read me at B-Ball Breakdown. This is my radio voice, James Hollis, Snotty Drippin. Thank you. Hey, Eli, thanks for having us on, man. It's been a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, is that it? I guess I should just sign us out now. For everybody listening, yeah, this is the B-Ball Breakdown. This is the B-Ball Breakdown crew, man. Thanks for having us. Woke up this morning. You got yourself.